Welcome to the Six Again podcast, your new destination for all things NRL. Here to bring you everything from team news to best bets are your hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Mutton. Let's kick off.
All right, we're a few days late, but this is our State of Origin number 3 wrap-up. Yes, I'm still rocking the Queensland scarf and it's upside down. I've had all this time to prepare. Wait on. You'll see this in reverse. Is that the right way?
That's the right way.
Yeah, even though I didn't get to watch it live, it was pretty awesome watching the replay without pressure or nervousness. How was your experience, Jared?
My experience was just...
was one of guilt and shame.
Nah, it was just... I was annoyed. Like, you can look at a team sheet, like, compare them, you're like, okay, that team should win. But if they don't come out with the right attitude, exactly like the first game, they're going to lose. Especially in that arena. And it was just like, come on. And you know what? I remember when Queensland went on their run and I saw Queensland get ahead and I was like, we're done. This is fucked. Because, you know, you look at their team with the quality they got in their team, you're like, we can't come back from this.
Oh, yeah, on the 8 straight Queensland team.
10 years ago, yeah. That team they had, you're like, when they get ahead, you're like, oh, shit. Now... like, I sat there in the first and third game going, we can still come back from this. The whole time. I was like, we can still do this. We've still got the quality. And look, we nearly did. But with the quality of the teams, we should not have got to that point at all.
100%.
And that was the annoying part of it. Like, it was just, come on. Like, it just seems like they're going in there with a, we've got this attitude.
And Brian Clough had a quote. We had a great team on paper. Unfortunately, the game was played on the grass.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much New South Wales in games 1 and 3. We'll definitely break down. That's the main part of this episode is our origin breakdown and then our way too early origin teams for 2021. But we've got some other stuff to talk about first. So 3 days later and still on a high, my name's Adam.
3 days later and I've forgotten about it. My name's Jared.
Oh.
I moved on.
There has been some stuff happening with regards to signings. We've spoken, well, me personally more at length about the non-free agency period of the NRL. So signings happen for 2022 already, even though we're still in 2020. But anyway, let's go through some of the signings. So one that's in Jared's interest or disinterest, Jack Johns back at the Knights. This is the son of Matt Johns, nephew of Andrew Johns.
You want me to comment on that?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's gotten a lot bigger since he left because he only played in the under-20s at Newcastle when we hooked him.
Mm-hmm.
He ball playing second row, 5'8" kind of player. I have really no opinion of him. But unfortunately, when he gets his Knights debut, he's going to have a hell of a lot of pressure with his last name.
Oh, no, he's Matty John's son. He'll be fine. Boom.
But yeah, no. It could be a good signing, but he's gonna be. It's gonna be a. What's the word? Is it a development contract? I'm not sure.
Yeah, training.
Yeah, right.
Trial and train. So, it is a 1 year development deal. He broke into the NRL in 2020, round 11 for the Rabbits against Canberra. Bigger build than Matty Johns. Second row.
He's about a foot taller than Matty or something.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting Newcastle signing, which I actually am excited about, is Suaso Suit.
Oh, yeah.
So, he's always been
There and thereabouts.
Yeah, but okay. They keep comparing Craig Bellamy to Adam O'Brien to Craig Bellamy because he worked under him for so long.
Mm.
If he is what they compare him to and he is up to what Craig Bellamy is, which no one has been so far, any of his assistants, Suaso Su is one of those players that Craig Bellamy turns into a superstar. So it'd be very interesting if Adam O'Brien can do that. So
true.
This is his second year now, so we've got to wait and see.
And Newcastle's kind of creating a reputation of pretty decent young back rows when you look at Lachlan Fitzgibbon, Mitch Barnett, and Brody Jones coming along as well. So
yeah, Mitch Barnett's a, well, actually, we that's true. So Mitch Barnett's a junior raider, but Lachlan Fitzgibbon, Boyd Cordner, and Tyson Frizzell.
They're our three juniors.
Yeah. That's not bad. And that's not too bad. So
and one's coming back next year. So
yeah,
looking like a pretty decent forward pack.
Oh, sorry. And
what about your other big signing?
Oh, yeah. So we signed a new superstar coach, another Craig Bellamy apprentice in Anthony Seibold. Yeah, he might be a better assistant coach.
He's got lots of upside, as in he can literally only go up.
Yeah, is what it is. He's there as a consultancy role, but look, he built his reputation as a good coach as an assistant coach. So
maybe that's his niche.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
And what about your other big signing?
We have another big signing?
Bailey Hodgson.
Oh, young. Yeah, he's what's he, the brother or the nephew?
Nephew of Josh Hodgson. He's a fullback centre. And it's the second young centre you guys have signed from England in this offseason. So
yeah, we've got Dom Young.
And re-signed Josh King. So you guys have been quite busy this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a clue about little Hodgson.
Yeah, I didn't even know if you knew about that. I was just throwing you under the bus.
Yeah, I know. I did see it, but I was like, I wouldn't have a clue if it's because he's only 19 or something.
Yeah, he made his Super League debut just after his 18th birthday.
Yeah, so, but I think the big one out of that little announcement was I think Josh King deserved a chance. Another contract. I like the fact they only put him on a year. He's been playing reasonably. He played really well on the bench, but we're pretty light on forwards this year. So he's going to get a lot more game time. He's going to have to earn his 2022 contract. So that's good.
I was going to bring this up later, but no, screw it. We'll do this the next round of signs and we'll bring it up. But remind me of Josh King, and it kind of ties into something else. So probably the most head-scratching announcement or signing of this week has been that of James Roberts to the Tigers.
This physically pains me.
I literally said last episode I didn't see Roberts coming back to the NRL.
I fucking told you he would. I told you someone's going to pick him up.
There'd be one club desperate enough. And it's the club who's also come out and said, we're not going to be the doormat. We're going to be taken seriously. And they signed a player who South made public. They've spent $100,000 on him and his family to get him right off the field, health-wise. And the fact that probably stepping away from the NRL for a while seemed to be the advice. And literally, what, 2 weeks later, he's re-signed with another club.
So I actually work in mental health. I do some, I touch on it at least. And this is the part that really annoys me. At the start of the year, me and Adam had a bit of a chat about it that we were really proud because James Roberts checked himself into a rehab clinic. And we don't know if it was mental health or something, but they stated it was for his mental health. And that was a week before the season. I think it was 10 days before the season started. And that was great. He checked himself in, but we both had doubts that someone going into a mental health clinic should be playing the first round of the season, because if you're needed, if it's needed enough to check yourself in, you've got to be there for more than 10 days to get yourself right. But no, he played the first round, I'm pretty sure. And it's just, by the sounds of it, just gone worse and worse until 2 weeks ago he had to leave his, I think it's $550,000 to $600,000 contract from South Sydney as a mutual release to get his mental health right. I think it's the same time frame. About 10 days later, he signed with another club, and I think this should be investigated, because I think that his salary should be put on South Sydney's salary cap, because it's a legitimate reason to let someone go off for compassionate grounds for mental health. But the NRL should not be signing off a contract a week later.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Same player. I don't agree with it at all. And look, I'm not saying anything against James Roberts, because obviously he's got his issues to deal with. I'm not his biggest fan as a player, but off field, you know, everyone has their own issues to deal with. But it's just wrong for me, what's going on here. And Tigers are not helping his mental health, if it's legitimate, by signing him and putting him in a full preseason like next week. Because I'm pretty sure that's when preseason starts, and they'll be expecting him there. So it's just, I don't like it.
Yeah, I thought there was a typo when I first saw it going, there's no way that this is happening. I was thinking, like, there has to be asterisks attached to this, and there slightly is. Both the years of this contract are in the club's favour, so there's going to be stipulations, obviously, in there that Roberts has to abide by, I would assume. But, yeah, it doesn't make the West Tigers look that flash either, apart from maybe they're saying, we're adding a dynamic, talented outside back, which they are. But there are also other talented outside backs, maybe not with the X factor as Roberts, that they could have signed with less fanfare as well. But I agree with you. I think this, there could be more to this down the track.
But this is the second club that he's left for mental health reasons.
Yes.
In a span of 2 years, 3 years. So, nah, it shouldn't be happening. Sorry for
interrupting. What else have we got here?
Sorry for interrupting you then. It's really annoying me about how this all went down.
The Dragons have re-signed Cade Ellis. And at the same time, they've released Corbin Sims from the final year of his contract, so he can take up a deal in the Super League, where he is signed with Hull KR on a 3-year deal. Dragons still have 3 spots left on their roster for 2021. Now, probably the most impressive signing this week, and to add to their growing list of impressive signings, and quite a formidable, young, mobile, talented forward pack, is the Warriors picking up Bailey Sirenin on a 3-year contract. And we spoke only a few episodes ago about, I mentioned I'd love Manly to have been signing Bailey Sirenin. So we've already got Curtis Sirenin, just based off what we saw of him this year coming off the bench for South Sydney. We'd reported that South had offered him an extension. However, they couldn't match the salary that Warriors are handing out to him. That's a good pickup for the Warriors. Like, they're
100%.
They're just getting talent after talent. He's going to be out of the spotlight over there as well.
He's actually bigger than Curtis.
Yeah, size wise.
And he can move just as well as him.
Mm.
Yeah,
he's a real.
I like it. Nathan Brown's putting together a really good squad over there.
So they're still lacking some outside back depth, but their forward pack is getting stocked up.
Yeah.
Really stocked.
But it'll be interesting because, you know, their outside backs is essentially Roger Tuivasa-Sheck anyway. So
now you still got Tuivasa-Sheck, Fusatura, Mamalo. Like, that's not horrible to start with, but it's the centers that have been there. Their issue the last few years, and Patrick Herbert, where do you go? Titans for 2 years.
Yeah.
But they picked up Aitken. But yeah, the depth of their outside backs is kind of what killed them this year without without Tuivasa-Sheck. And the
Wings. But it's still not a bad back line because you got really young halves, Nikorima and Kieran. Oh, not Kieran. Harris Tavita. And then you got Aitken. And then they've got a centre spot to fill, but they've got Fusatua, Mamalo, and Tuivasa-Sheck.
Yeah.
So the only definite non-place I'm seeing is centre. And look, New Zealand have a habit of producing some fucking quality players out of nowhere.
I'm just looking through
Katoa.
They still got Peter Hiku.
Yeah.
For next year. Oh, Marcelo Montoya they picked up.
And Adam's not saying depth for Adam means that if there's an injury or two. Like,
yeah, Paul Turner's he's a half, isn't he?
He's a lock. What we agreed with Parramatta's biggest issue this year was they got no depth, which they have actually rectified with a few signings, but you just know when a team gets a few injuries, how quality they are. Like Melbourne are a perfect example because they bring in quality players when players get injured. Mm. And Parramatta didn't have that. So that's what Adam means by depth. If there's one or two injuries in the back line, long-term injuries, which, you know, it does happen, what quality are you bringing in behind them?
Yeah, so an example of that already this off-season, Storm have lost Vunivalu, and we're looking like they were going to lose Addo Carr. They signed Robert Jennings. They've signed Remia Smith. Last year, they had Sandor Earl, Paul Momorowski, players with NRL experience who aren't going to be as good as your first grade, but aren't completely unknown either.
You brought in, when they got an injury in the wing, they brought in Sandor Earl, which obviously he's not a star, but he was so safe in everything he did. So it was great.
I just saw on the Warriors list, Elisa Tavuyara. And I didn't know who that was. So I just put it into Google. He's come from rugby union. Ratuva. He's 30 years old, but he's a wing. 100 kilos, 186 centimeters.
So it's like Comrade Harold.
Yeah, it could be an idea of an outside back there. I just saw that on their page. But yeah, so Warriors are shaping less as the flamboyant ball movers that we've come to expect, but with still impressive X factor forwards who can shift the ball if required. So Adenua Fanua Blake, we know he's got an offload. Ben Murdoch Masilla's turned into a ball playing.
But they've got Jazz Tavega, Bailey Siren, and Tohu Harris.
Elise Katoa.
Daniel Roach, Elise Katoa. They've got quality players. Yeah, quality players.
Okay, so this brings us to the point I was going to bring up before with Josh King. So West Tigers have also signed Dane Laurie, starting in 2022. So he's one of the Penrith youngsters who have come through the ranks there. Dynamic young player. Now, he's going to start a two-year deal after next season. The fact that you can sign a deal like that, to me, is wrong anyway.
Another story.
And Penrith, if they're going to look after themselves as a club, will just sit him on the bench for the whole season. Because they've got enough depth in their halves with Jerome Luai, Cleary, Tyrone May. That'll get them through the season, even if Matt Burton leaves now and you put Dane Laurie on the sidelines. They're not going to get anything out of him playing for a year if he's not going to be in their starting squad. I hate the fact there that you can sign, a deal ahead of time. But something with Josh King signing the one-year deal, I do like. Instead of this signing a season out ahead of time, bringing it back to Harry Grant last year for Melbourne Storm and the West Tigers, putting a player out on loan for a season to get his development and then come back, where it serves both parties. What I would have preferred to see here with the Dane Laurie signing would be West Tigers sign him for 3 years and then loan him out for the first season back to Penrith. So West Tigers are paying for that salary, whatever. Penrith's holding on to him because they obviously believe they're going to make use of him at some point. Otherwise, they would have just let him go for 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So if he's going to be starting for 2 years, a year from now, and you don't want to release him a year early, let Tigers sign him and then Tigers loan him straight back to Penrith. It serves both clubs, utilising the trade. Tigers still get him on in the club when they want, but Penrith still get that extra year of use out of him that they want. The other thing I do like, so that supports the trade movement, and the loan movement. Another thing I'd like to see would be the player trades becoming more and more. Now, this Josh King signing for a season. Say Knights have signed him for $200,000 for the year, right? Plays the house down. Knights are coming...
first.
No. So say the Knights are coming like 14th, okay? They're not going to make the finals, but King's having an outstanding year. He's worked his way into the starting rotation. He's knocked Safidi out of his out of his starting prop role, right?
Oh, mate. Righto. Yep. That's a big season. Props
can do that. Like, literally.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying I'd love that to happen. That's a good thing.
Blake came out of nowhere for Manly. He was just whatever. So say he's playing like that. Knights aren't going to make the finals. You have someone who's like, who's a team we're expecting to be there or thereabouts. Canberra. Okay. Say Canberra coming fifth or sixth and there's an injury to Damas Louis or Soliola or someone like that. And they don't have a replacement there. They trade Newcastle to young prospects or whatever for Josh King for the rest of that season. So Newcastle doesn't get the chance to re-sign Josh King off his awesome year, but he's added value to not only them, but to a club seeking a forward in that sort of form. Canberra pick up a prop for the rest of the season that they need through the leading into the finals. They have a chance to re-sign him at the end of the season if they want. And Newcastle will get someone like Bailey Simonson the year before last. That sort of level player. What do you reckon?
Yeah, no, that's cool.
That's cool. That'd be way too extreme for the NRL to even think about doing.
No, but that's what I was going to say. Like, that's a very convoluted process. And we are just at the start not. Of... No, well, for the NRL it is.
But I think after seeing how the Harry Grant trade worked out and how public it was, I think the NRL needs to take that sort of momentum and introduce
player loans,
player trades, club trades.
I 100% agree. I love the player trade. But the NRL couldn't sort out, $4,000? The discrepancy between Momorowski and Grant. That they could not sort that out for at least a month. The thing you're talking about, and this is why I use the word convoluted, because it seems great from our perspective, but the NRL is so stringent on salary cap that this is the next step in salary cap rotting, I reckon, because trade deals are the new frontier for the NRL, and it's something that we only just started this year. And we're not ready for big stuff.
Do you know what it would help?
What?
Public salaries.
Oh, please. Okay, so yes,
you can't deny that though.
No, it's not. But I'm pretty sure that you got to get that past the Players Association.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying it'd help.
But yeah, so the NRL aren't ready for it, but it is the next step in the NRL's progress, and we got to dip our toe into it this year. And I honestly believe Tigers think they got screwed on. Not overly screwed over, but they got the raw end as far as Harry Grant's development goes.
That's their fault.
No,
there was no loss out of that.
Well, Melbourne were better out of the ready than anyone else than the Tigers. But no, I 100% agree with you on there should be more trades. I just don't think the NRL hierarchy are ready for it.
Trades and loans are different though. Like the Harry Grant, Momorowski, that's a loan because they're just having them for the season. They're coming back. The West Tigers were paying Momorowski's wages. Oh, Storm were paying Grant's wages. And this is like a permanent trade deal.
Papali goes down. They're 100% not ready for it.
Yeah, I know. But
they're not ready for it to handle it. They're not ready to find caveats or add caveats to the salary cap.
You shouldn't have to, though. If you're, say you're Josh King, whatever, 200 grand, the prospects that go back in return are worth 200 grand on the salary cap.
No, I get that. I 100% understand
that. They should be able to accept it and make it not hard.
But what I'm saying is that, like I said, the NRL struggle with 4 grand. That's why I think the caveats need to be, because 4 grand should be wiped off, but the NRL couldn't do it.
That's what I'm hoping the old NRL, after they see how successful it was. Hopefully they've learned a lesson, because that would be so cool.
They couldn't handle it. So that's why I think their salary cap has to have a whole book on loans and deals, because that's what happens.
If they can get it worked out, I'm just thinking of ways that this season could have gone differently. If it was worked out, think of Manly situation where Trbojevic goes down. I was calling on Abbott Hopewadi for freaking however long. Say we find a club that needed a center or needed a winger, whatever, and they've got a reserve fullback who's not getting a run. Think of maybe like a Caleb Aitkins at Penrith.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking,
Simon, something like we ship out our young forward. We ship out Corey Waddell to Penrith for the rest of the season because bloody Kikau got injured. I don't know. And we take Caleb Aitkins in return for the season to take. That'd be so cool.
I love it. They're not
ready. Get it sorted, NRL. Make it exciting.
They 100% are not ready for that level of
fun.
Well, fun would be the word, but level of I don't even different. Know what the word is.
Something well, different.
Level of how deep they can go as far as salary cap, because salary cap holds so much stuff back.
I know.
And it's just unfortunately. And it's there for a reason, I agree, but it is a bane on our game.
Let's talk about some positive news then. Injuries. So, Knights, Blake Green said he's recovering well from knee surgery. Start running before or just after Christmas, although there's no time frame when he'll be playing yet. Also, David Fifita expects to start preseason in rehab as he continues recovery from ankle surgery. However, considering it was his first full interview as a Titans player after surgery, etc. He's also came out and said that his goal next season is obviously to win a premiership. So I love that. Titans on the way up, big superstar signing. He's top four, top eight would be cool, but ultimately premiership is the be all and end all, as it should be. And he'll get to take on the Broncos in round two if he does get back into the team early enough from his injury recovery. James Desco and Cody Walker have both recovered well after both being heavily concussed in the State of Origin on Wednesday night. All right. Talking about State of Origin, let's get into it. Queensland 20 defeat New South Wales 14. Queensland, well, the State of Origin trophy returns to Queensland after being New South Wales hands for 2 years. But awesome. So, yes, I didn't get to watch this live. I was at my school's graduation, formal, as a teacher, not as a student. And our head of year for the year 12s, huge Origin fan. He's he was a coach of Tino when he was in year 12, that fella. And when the score came through, he led a, I say win, you say Queenslander chant with Queensland chant with the year 12s. And that was pretty awesome because our principal's New South Wales supporter. And that just added to the night being awesome. So I knew the score. But I ensured that I didn't see the timestamp on the points because I wanted to watch the game. And it was, if I didn't know the score, it to me, it felt like one of those games where I don't believe how commentators don't pick up on it enough, where one team is just dominating, end up losing so they don't make the most of their opportunities. And the other team will get an intercept or a try like New South Wales got where there was a knock on and two players are going for the ball, that sort of stuff, and they pull out a win. Even knowing the score, that's the sort of game it felt like, where Queensland were dominating, but it felt like New South Wales were going to score on their limited opportunities, which they did. But Queensland still also did enough. I still think there are so many games where a team dominates and still lose. Maybe soccer more so, where it's only one goal, but It was a damn good game to watch. End-to-end action.
Well,
not the highest of quality all around, but
I think the speed of it was up a tempo from the first two. It just kept progressing up in speed because that was obviously going to happen. I thought Welch and Papali played really well, but Munster just... New South Wales didn't know how to handle him. No. I reckon Bennett just told him, get the ball and just run. I don't think he even got told to pass the ball. He just was just... And, you know, the kick he put in... Well, all three of the kicks he put
the
in...
The three kicks, yeah.
Edric Lee tried.
Ridiculous.
The first one was a fluke. The second one was lucky. The fact... Oh, no, I'm not saying... Because in rugby league... Nothing's lucky as because you earn that try through attack and deep, like hard running. So, but I'm just saying fluky and lucky because, you know,
he had to get perfect bounces.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean by it. But I'm saying that they earned the try through the work they did for like previous 10 minutes. That's what I'm saying. So the first kick he only got like a
two
to the ball. And then, you know, bounced up for him. The second kick, Tupou got absolutely smashed, even though he had a, like 90% control of it and just went. And then they got tackled. And then the bounce was so bad for
everyone.
Franco Lee that it definitely could have turned into a knock-on. It didn't. It wasn't a knock-on, but it definitely could have turned into a knock-on. And then, obviously, you love Edric Lee's try celebration. He gets up, licks his hand and rubs it through his cornrows. You're like, yeah, this is awesome.
So when Jared's talking about the bounce of the ball, that's an exact representation. Like the first two that Munster put in, bounce end over end, the one that actually led to the try was the hardest to predict. Was a bloody floater and it didn't bounce good for anybody. But yeah, you earn your right to be in that position to put that play on.
That's right. So I'm just saying that they're fluky bounces. So they're my three standouts for Queensland. I thought those three just won them the game. Plus Harry Grant's little stint, which I want to talk about the statements made before the game later. For New South Wales, I honestly thought with our field position and our where Queensland were putting us the whole game, our forwards done a very good job. I think Safidi again, I'm giving him a rap, and this isn't bias. I just think he played really well again. for what he had, for what was in front of him. How Queensland just smacking him around the whole game. He got up every single time when he's up against, you know, Welch and Papali. Like, fuck. I think Cook... I actually think Cook got offended that Grant was playing so well, so he started running the ball a little bit more. Because when Grant made those first two initial breaks, Cook was not running the ball. But after that, he's like, oh, shit.
This guy might be
better
than
me. I better step up. That's when Cook's... And New South Wales are always good when Cook runs the ball. That's and he just... There's times where... I don't know if he's not fit enough, but that's what I think he needs a break. I've said that last podcast. I think our halves, other than one freakish 40-20, I think our halves went missing.
I disagree with you. I think Cleary played quite well. Watching it without the maybe...
His game awareness was not there. So in that last 10 minutes, and this is what I said throughout the whole series, that's when First and Cronk, Johns, Lockyer, all those players... Lewis, Fittler won the game for people, and that's what made him great players. He got caught fourth tackle, twice in the last 10 minutes running the ball.
I think...
With Cody Walker off the field. So that ruined the whole kick.
And even though you were six behind, I never really felt he was an opportunity to win... To win the game, maybe to get back in the game, but
that's my point. They aren't those kind of players who aren't going to do that.
I think he kept you guys in the game more than you're giving him credit for. Because going back, we'll talk about Valentine Holmes bombing a hat trick, but yeah, on the first one of those, on the second one of those, where he had the bobble, the player coming across in cover defense was Cleary. He put the 40-20 in. Why not?
If there's no pressure there, he probably would have caught it. That's one, the bare minimum of what he should be doing. I want my halfback to win the game with the ball in his hand. Cleary. I want him to win the game.
I don't expect my Cleary. I don't expect my halfback to be flying into the corner post trying to stop a winger from scoring.
I do. I'd
expect every player to be doing it, but to see it as my halfback. That's awesome. Extra efforts that you don't have to be. That's not in. It's probably in their job description the least out of every position. You'd expect every other player to be there ahead of him. But the fact that he's there doing it.
But that's what makes great players. And I'm glad he did that because before the second game of this year, his biggest highlight was tapping Greg Inglis out the sideline a few years ago. That was his biggest highlight.
All right. So you say you got caught running the ball. Who was he going to pass it to?
Sorry?
You said he got caught running the ball in the last 10 minutes. Who was there to pass it to?
Well, that's when he should be talking and pushing everyone up. And giving it to... Because White can barely touch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You give him the ball early and let him create... Like, the one time he did, he now created a try out of it because Gay Guy was really struggling with his size. So they didn't give Whiten the ball enough. And this is what Andrew Johns used to do well. And I know I keep going back to that, but Lockyer done well as well. Smith done well. They knew that they had to give the ball to Gidley, Gasnier, Cooper, Minicello, Inglis, Tahu, Hodges. They just give them the ball and let them do what they had to do. These guys, Whiten... can be the same level as these guys, but he's not getting the ball. And that's 100% on the halves.
I think it's on the forwards first.
Which, like I said, the forwards were making meters. I honestly think they got us out of trouble a lot more than they could have because Queensland's forwards actually dominated us. Yes. I'm not sorry. Queensland forwards done really well, but New South Wales kept us in the game.
It wasn't a domination by the Queensland forwards because they didn't run for many meters. Yes.
Sorry, no, it wasn't a dominant, but that's why I think New South Wales forwards kept us in the game, kept us where that point was. I think Paulo was a bit of a haphazard. I don't agree with only Nathan Brown only playing 13 minutes or whatever he did.
Yeah, that was dumb. Especially how it's going. Like, when you say the forwards kept you in the game, I think it was through tackling as well, not through...
Yeah, but that's the forward meters. Job. Like, Crichton. Jesus Christ. Trbojevic, he made 37 and did not miss one tackle. Crichton, I don't think he just ran around it. At one point, he was playing right second row. I saw him make a cover tackle on the left-hand side.
Yeah, he like, had a good game, Crichton.
Yeah, he was smashing it.
Whoa.
But that's my point. Everyone, I think everyone in our forwards done well, but we didn't have the halves who were playing off that. And that's what really annoyed me. Like Walker, that's his job to play off momentum.
Yeah, he didn't do well in this game.
No, I in.
Whoa, like, Damien Cook 50 meters.
Yeah, so that's not on.
Holy shit, Payne Haas 35 meters.
Yeah, that's not on.
Frizzell,
and that's another meters. Thing. And I've said this about the Broncos as well. Haas should not be taking the shit runs. He should be the one doing the off the flat balls or the runs that could lead to tries. That's what genuinely annoys me. I think that New South Wales didn't play to their strengths in their back line at least. And look, we nearly pulled it out because I don't believe it should have been a penalty try because it was 10 to 15 metres out.
Yeah, definitely not a penalty try.
Definitely not a penalty try, but I believe Adakar would have got there.
Most likely.
Yeah, so...
It's too far out from the line. Like, he could have tripped. He could have...
No, that's right. I
100% knocked on. Yeah, so many variables.
But our back line was good enough to create that out of nothing.
Yeah.
But our halves were not feeding it to him in enough time.
I also don't think...
That was...
When you guys had opportunity, you took the most of it, which has been the case... the second and third game, but you also weren't given the field position to do it.
Yeah, that's right. But our back line, like our halves weren't... So Queensland, they made it a thing to throw it out to the back line, and that's how they got so many meters.
They saw that like in the first 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. New South Wales should have fought fire with fire. Our back line's better. It's faster and it's bigger.
But you know why Queensland did that?
Because New South Wales were pushing them so hard in the second game, moving up at them, shutting down their forward so early. So they moved them around.
Yeah, Bennett made an adjustment based on, all right, 100%. This is how they're going to do it. And he made an adjustment in defense as well.
And New South Wales should have played 5-5 and the exact same thing back to them.
Should have. That's where experience comes into it. So you could see defensively, Adokar was given nothing until like that was the only spot or game where he had free space. They would, and Tupou was getting like 3-4 person teamed, saying you're not going to run back on us like you did in game two. And it led to a try because they absolutely belted him. And in the first game, he was the one who did the offload as well for Munster to score. He kicked off because he passed under pressure. And this time it was through a knock on. So,
yeah. So,
yeah. And okay, Bennett outcoached
100%.
Fittler 100%. And someone like Pappenhausen probably would have made a difference. We talked about that before the game, though.
Yeah.
I didn't like New South Wales bench. I said,
no, I didn't like it at all.
You've got three players that are exactly the same in. So I can't remember their four. Like, Finucane, Paulo, and Brown. You're either lock or prop, and you're a ball of round, and you just run straight.
Yeah.
Isaiah Yeo was the only one to offer anything different. And Queensland's bench, where you had the X factor, paid off.
Yeah. So I think also... Fittler made a decision, a wrong decision in when Tedesco got injured.
I'm interested in this bit.
So Tedesco got injured. Obviously, you put Gufferson at fullback, despite the fact that Gould kept going on Whiten. Gufferson came second to the Dally Ends.
And it was Dally End fullback of the year.
Yeah. But put Gutherson back there, but put Angus Crichton into the centres over Isaiah Yeo. He's a lot quicker. He's a lot better defensively, and he's a lot better attackingly. And then Isaiah Yeo could have played in the second row, which he's better at. That's what he made the decision. That was an issue for me, and he got beaten that many times in that position. So that's I felt like that was a wrong call putting Isaiah Yeo in there. Okay, so
I like that. Do you think that might have been based on how well Crichton had started the game? Still was their most impressive forward.
It doesn't matter because you had Gay Guy up against Yeo and you're shitting all over him.
Oh, yeah. You saw it straight away. It's just like when New South Wales did a Capewell in the second game.
Yeah. Okay. So what I was going to say about Gallen came out and Cherry Evans made the most of it. It was fantastic. This is the worst Queensland side in 40 years.
Exactly what I wanted my captain to say.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
I agree. The team wasn't flash. And I said that the whole time. Adam agreed the team wasn't flash.
Yeah.
But in saying that too, you can't tell how good a team is until after the whole team's retired. So back in 2005, when Andrew Johns ripped through Queensland's team, right? 2006 is when Queensland done their big thing. Can you remember the quality players that Queensland had in their squad in that thing?
In which one?
2005 series when New South Wales won 2-0, New South Wales. And back in this time, you wouldn't know that this team was as good as they were. Okay? So when they won 2-1, Billy Slater was in the squad. Darren Lockyer, Jonathan Furst, Steve Price, Petro Sivanisiva, Cam Smith, Michael Crocker, Chris Flannery, Carl Webb, Brad Fawn, Ash Harrison, Matt Bowen. So that's just not the team. Like, this is all over 3 games, but they had some fucking quality players. And back in 2005, you didn't know because this team was considered not great in 2005. But they still had Jonathan Thurston, Billy Slater, Matt Singh, Sean Berry, and Cam Smith, Sivanisiva and Price.
Who's playing fullback? You look
back, Slater. So you look back on that Spell team. Was
coming off the bench.
Yeah, you look back on that team and you're like, damn, that's a good team. These guys got dominated.
Hmm.
You don't know how good a team is until after they're retired. If a kid right now who's been watching football for the last 6 or 7 years saw that team, you're like, oh, that'll win easily. Like, that is a really good team. But you sit there and go, no, they got smacked around. I think it was like 32-6 in the third game. They got beaten quite easily. So that's why I don't like people saying this is the best, worst team they've got because you don't know how Branko Lee's going to retire, how good he's going to be. You don't know how Harry Grant's going to retire. He could be bad when he retires. So,
what was the New South Wales team that beat that Queensland team?
Okay, so you had Minicello, Matt King, Mark Gasnier, Tamana Tahu, Bray Fenasta, Andrew Johns. Prop was Steve Simpson.
We played David more Deere, for Australia in New Roth. South Wales than Nasta did.
Yeah, Nathan Hindmarsh, Craig Fitzgibbon, Ben Kennedy, Craig Gower, Steve Menzies, Luke Bailey, Andrew Ryan, Ricky Stewart's coach.
So the least decorated New South Wales player was either Bailey or Anasta.
Yeah, but look, you just don't know. That's my point. So
I don't like. You've gone over the last both those teams and like there's legends throughout that whole thing, but that was a thing at that time. You had one team of legends and one team of up and comers. If you look at it this game, I'm trying to think on the New South Wales side who's at that level now.
Tedesco,
and you have Tedesco,
yeah, Cook.
See, I don't think so. I still think he's quite overrated. Bassov, he's got one skill set, which is speed.
Yeah.
He's not like your Badiris or your Smith.
Adokar.
Or Adokar, yep.
Yeah, I'd say Whiten's up there now.
Okay, there's three.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but what I'm saying is that...
You'd put Cordner at... Well, most people would.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is that... Like,
I know, you're saying that we don't know how good Australia, like the Queensland team's going to be.
Yeah.
But you could put that argument for that 2006 team as well. Because you Adam Logs, you're... The fact I can't remember the rest of the others who came in for that series.
2005, I was talking about.
Yeah, I know, but 2006 is only a year later when Queensland won.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the thing. Like this, that's when they started the dynasty. So, like, in the halves, you had JT and Lockyer versus Johns and I think it was Fittler. Barrett and
Anasta.
Yeah. So, if you look back on their careers, Queensland had a better halves pairing.
I still think I think Queensland's got a better halves pairing now.
But no, but that's my point. Like, if you look, you don't know what Walker and Cleary's careers are going to go for the next 10 years. But look, Cherry Evans and Munster, they've got what? Cherry Evans is over 30, isn't he?
Yeah. But I think your argument at the start was how good could this Queensland team be?
Yeah.
And
they could be good, and they're missing a lot of players like Fifita, Horsburgh,
Ponga.
Yeah, so they're missing a lot of players. So it's just Gallen was an idiot by saying that.
Yeah.
One, because you don't know what the team's going to be. Like Brenko Lee, he's 24 or something. And I was the same. I didn't rate him, but I knew you don't underrate a Queensland squad. And two, why the fuck would you say that to a Queensland team coached by Wayne Bennett, assistant coach Mal Meninga, when they're going into Suncorp? Because they didn't learn
anything about when those seasons are losing.
Yeah. In New South Wales, supporters can't actually go to fucking Suncorp because the border's closed. And look, I like Paul Gallen, but he shouldn't be saying this shit still. It's just getting under people's skin. There was a stat there. It was had him compared to Harry Grant. So one series win for Harry Grant, one try and one game. Paul Gallen was 24 games, one series win and one try.
Grant's a better player. That's all I heard from that stat.
And what? Look, I understand Paul Gallen's copped a lot of criticism in his career, and he can handle it. But just because he's in the media doesn't mean he should be saying this kind of stuff. And I have never heard a ex-Queensland player say this kind of stuff. So, do you reckon when they like walk out of camp, they're like, you need to support your team for the rest of your career, no matter what you think about it. Don't say anything negative.
Cooper Cronk's a great example of that.
Yeah, and New South Wales, when they walk out, I want you to back your shit out of the New South Wales team for the next 12 years when you after you retire, because that's how we roll. And then
Cronk made it quite clear that...
And when Queensland are looking bad, I want you, even though the history suggests when they're the underdogs, they win, but I want you to start criticizing them. This is
Cooper Cronk does it perfectly because he's actually an ex-player who can break down the game and analyze it. Mick Ennis is quite good too, actually. But he can explain why New South Wales will win without having to say this is the worst Queensland team of 40 years. Because he'll point to New South Wales' strengths, not Queensland's weaknesses. Now, these are some random things that popped in when you're saying analysis. If you haven't seen the Fox Sports feed after the Origin game where Kevin Walters and Corey Parker are commentating outside Suncorp and they get they go to them from the panel, it's got Cooper Cronk on it. Look it up. It's freaking brilliant. They're about to start reviewing the game live. And this New South Wales player run up, patron runs up behind him and goes, New South Wales. And Kevin Walter turns around and goes, Oi, get away from here. This is a Queensland party. We won't have any of you around. And then turns back around, like Cooper Cronk's laughing his head off on the battle. And then all these Queensland guys start swamping. And there's like, and that's the last we saw of Kevy and Corey. But they're like, Kevy just like snaps from TV mode to get the hell out of here. It's so good. Cooper Cronk's just like laughing on the paddle.
I got a question.
Yeah.
As a Queensland supporter, do you think Walters could have won that series?
Nah.
So you think Bennett had that big of an influence?
Not Bennett alone.
Okay.
I think Bennett, you've got to give him, and this hurts me to say because I haven't been his staunchest supporter, as people would know. You've got to give him credit for the balls of the players he picked and brought in. Injuries played a role in who he had to choose from. But even then, I thought his selections were quite odd in certain positions. There's still, and we've talked about the previous two games, there's a couple of things I would have tweaked that I don't think would have changed the outcome either way, with Arrow and Fasimawali, etc. But he made the adjustments required, more so than Fittler did. I'm not going to say he rested off his laurels. Yeah, I don't think he rested on his laurels in game two, because I think game two and game one were very similar in how they played out. The difference was New South Wales made the most of their chances in the second game when they didn't in the first. If they'd done it in the first, Queensland would have been under back-to-back sets of defense like they were in the second game, and it could have been a different outcome. I think the fact that Fittler picked the four forwards in this last game, and unlike Buzz Rothfield, whose article is slamming Fittler and his selections, yeah, that's all well and good if you'd written an article beforehand slamming his decisions, which you didn't, so retire. it was such a shitty article. Like, anyone could have written that.
He digs the knife in when he can.
Yeah. We talked about that. There's no X factor on the bench, and our bench makeups were quite different. Yeah, no, I don't think... I think Kevy would have picked a similar team, but I don't think he would have got the similar outcome.
Okay. That's cool. I'm just asking.
That's also the baggage from the previous two series as well. It's kind of like... I'm interested to see how good Fittler actually is as a coach, because the last 3 years he's had the lion's share of talent and lack of injuries to choose from. And honestly, the team has won out on talent but hasn't progressed, if that makes sense.
See, for me, I said it throughout this whole series that I haven't overly been a fan of his selections. Like, I didn't agree with dropping Kiri. Wasn't 100% fan of not even naming Clemmer. And there was a few things I have said, but I've said all along, I trust him because his decisions have worked out. His big calls worked out. Dropping Latrell Mitchell comes to mind. That worked out.
Dropping Ferguson.
Yeah, so I just believe that he is a very quirky coach with the way he approaches the game. But I think Adam's right. His tactics to surprise Queensland are not there. So I actually didn't say, and this is feeling bad, but I had a feeling that New South Wales were going to play the same way they played in game two, where they dominated. And that was right. They played the same way, thinking Queensland were going to play the same way, which Queensland adapted to what happened to them the second game. They analyzed the game, went, look, if we throw the ball around and do this, if this happens, that kind of stuff. New South Wales did it change anything between the second and third game to keep Queensland on their toes, which didn't help. And you can say all you want that they changed something between the first and second game, but all they did was kick early. That was the only thing, the only difference. They kicked early and they're aggressive in defense. They got up in their face. Literally the only difference between the two teams in the second game. There was no...
They ran the ball back a hell of a lot better. Dan too.
Yeah, they had a good attitude.
And that was one of the things that Queensland or Bennett got them to change in the third game, because New South Wales rolling sets were coming off the back of Tupou's running meters, which they didn't have this game. So that was a big change. They kicked
out a Carroll game, who had a toe injury.
Yeah.
So New South Wales, and look, they were on the front foot. All Fittler had to do, and Badiris and their coaching staff, was come up with something new, a new tactic to confuse the Queenslanders. And they didn't do that.
They did come up with a new tactic. They kept the same 17. They haven't done that in like 10 years.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. They kept the same 17 from game two.
100% promise you they didn't.
Who did they bring in?
Well, Cordner got dropped, didn't he?
That was after game one.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
They had the exact same 17.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Which...
That's what I mean. That's something new. They haven't done that in like so long.
Yeah, which I'm not 100% a fan of, because obviously their selections didn't work out, but Fittler's are known for not changing stuff that's working, which I believe the Queensland changes threw them a lot. I think Edric Lee played really well not really well, but he was safe.
You got to remember that Queensland's changes were based on injuries for pretty much this whole series, bar Cohen Hess.
Cohen Hess.
And Harry Grant and Ben Hunt. That was the only two.
Who was the center?
Xavier Coates got injured.
No, that was the winger.
Yeah, but...
Who was the second row? Because that was Dunamis Louis was dropped.
Capewell was center.
Yeah. Capewell was center. He got moved to second row.
Yeah.
So, and who was the starting second
row? Coates got injured.
Yeah, but who was the starting second row in the second game?
Second game, geez, Kafusi obviously, and Sua, who went to the bench.
Yeah. So, Fodawaker and Dunamis Louis got dropped.
No, Dunamis Louis was...
dropped.
Was he to the bench?
For Christian Welch.
Oh, yeah, Welch came back. That was injury. That's the only reason Louis came in.
Yeah, so...
So, all series, the only ones done on form were Cohen Hess in the first one.
But there was also stuff like Gay Guy switching sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because he switched from right to left. Which... opened up a hell of a lot of possibilities.
Those for Lees to work together.
So, yeah. So, there was so... little things like that made a big deal. And also, you know, Corey Howland and Valentine Holmes swapping around as well. So, that stuff to Fittler just... they knew that was happening, but New South Wales didn't throw any curveballs at Queensland in any way, which with the quality of teams they have is really kind of annoyed me. I wish Phil Gould was involved in the New South Wales squad.
Well, he's obviously on the Australian Olympic Committee because he wants Addo Carr in the Australian team because he's the fastest man on the planet.
I really want Phil Gould to come up against Wayne Bennett in Origin again. I reckon that'd be fantastic. And Phil Gould would have came up with something different. Guaranteed. All right.
So a couple of things. We'll touch on the controversy, I guess. Not the end of the game, because it was pretty straightforward. It was a knock on into another player.
That's crap. Yeah.
That's the end of the game. But the Tedesco Jairo incident. So Tedesco has run the ball back. He's been knocked in the head by Josh Papali's knee, which I don't want to wish on anybody. And you saw the damage it did. Arrow was in on the tackle, making the dominant tackle, as you do. They know how important Tedesco is. The fact that he'd lost the ball, Arrow picked him up and put him back on the ground quite aggressively. There was an uproar. I hated Anasa's commentary because...
What did that to say?
Oh, he said, that's a disgrace. That's disgusting. All this stuff. Also, we were looking at it through a camera lens from the complete opposite side of Tedesco, where we were seeing straight at his face, the whole part of the body that Arrow obviously couldn't see because it was on the other side of him. And literally 30 seconds before that, and Asher had gone, oh, that's a solid hit. He's hurt there. You can't sit there in commentary with that access to it and speak for a player who is in the heat of the moment against your hated enemy, whose star players just knocked the ball in a dangerous position and giving him a bit of extra douche. It happened later in the game with Munster and Cleary when they were on the ground and Munster was trying to get up and Cleary was holding face, hand down the face. There's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, as soon as he saw that he was unconscious or affected, he was the first one to call for the trainer. He stayed there. He didn't run off. Queens end up scoring off it. It was playing the advantage, as is what happens. There's an uproar of him being a grub and all this shit. And yet in the second game, Frizzell and Munster Moore go for a ball. Frizzell makes contact with him in the air. He lands, whiplashes on the ground, and not one New South Wales player stayed to check on him. What's the difference?
I wasn't a fan of it, what Arrow did.
Yeah, you could see a New South Wales player doing it to...
No, come on.
You could.
No.
Now, I'm sorry. I just want to differentiate. If he knew he was unconscious and did that, that would be disgusting.
So, I actually had this conversation earlier tonight, and it was with people. Let's just put it this way. I wasn't going to get in an argument with. But the shoulder charge in the NRL is penalised in the off chance you can hit someone in the head. Right? That's why it's penalised. That's why it's banned, in the off chance. So when I 100% agree with Arrow not knowing it, Tedesco was knocked out. 100% agree with Arrow being the type of player not to do that. He's not a grub.
Yeah.
He's proven that.
The cleanest players in the whole comp.
Yeah. The ball was very far away from Tedesco when he picked him up because he got on the ground, got hit, and then the ball came swinging. It's about five. I think it's next to the try line. Queensland have already picked it up when old mate, when Arrow picked the ball up. So on one hand, you got the shoulder charge in the off chance it could have happened. On the other hand, you've got someone who's knocked out, who's, you don't know if he has another injury. He copped a knee to the top of the head. And he was lifeless. You don't know, like I said, don't know if he's got a neck injury. And you ragdoll him and throw him back on the ground aggressively. It could have exacerbated him so much more. I think that if you're going to penalize an act on the chance he could get injured, and then not penalize an act on the chance when he's already injured. I see a discrepancy there.
See, I don't, because you could say that for every tackle on the field. There's a chance of injury on every tackle.
No, there is. There is. No, I agree. But what I'm saying is...
And you can't... I'm sorry, you can't put all that in if you've already said that he didn't know he was unconscious.
No, no, no. But that's my point. That if you're accidentally going to ragdoll someone... No, if you're going to ragdoll someone when the ball's 10 meters away and he's already hurt and it could have made his injury 10 times worse, it's exactly the same. Oh, actually, no, I won't even say that.
I don't even know. I don't even think he knew he was hurt.
No, he didn't. But that's my point.
There's no point there, though.
There is, though. Like,
what he was doing was the same as belting Tupou so he knocks on the ball in front of his line.
No.
And after Tupou plays the ball, rubbing him on the head and mate. Cheers for giving us the ball. You fucked up.
Yeah, no, I agree with that shit.
That's what he was doing.
Hold up. My point is that if you're going to penalize and suspend act for potential being hurt.
Yeah, but there's a law in place because that happens continuously and that's planned.
What? Yes, but the fact would we be having a complete conversation if he had a neck injury? Tedesco had a neck injury and he picked him up and made it worse because he was completely ragged up.
Cameron Smith had to live the rest of his career, and that's been brought out again with the audio that he had straight after Alec McKinnon's injury, which wasn't a bad tackle. And he's saying, is that going to be a penalty? Why would that be a penalty? And see, he had no idea. It's exactly the same as Arrow.
This is the part that annoys me personally, because I don't agree with what I'm saying. Shut up. Just let me finish. What I'm saying is that it's hard to explain. So what I'm saying is that the NRL penalizes potential injuries. And the fact is that you can't deny that what Arrow did could have made him a lot worse if he had another injury other than concussion.
If he still had the ball and picked him up after a tackle and had been put down, he would have been penalized for work after the tackle.
That's my point.
The NRL has punished him because he's been sent to the review committee, and he'll probably get suspended for it, even though it's probably not in the rule book.
But has he actually been in trouble for this? Is he actually in trouble for this?
Yeah, the NRL's already... Okay.
But what I'm saying is, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but the NRL's put a precedent in. If someone's already hurt and you exacerbate that injury, you should be potentially sent off or simbin or fined or suspended or whatever. If from a safety perspective, made the injury worse when Tedesco didn't even have the ball in his hands, unfortunately, he done the wrong thing. Because what I'm saying is that he potentially could have made Tedesco's injury worse. And the shoulder charge, potentially, that can make someone hurt.
Yeah.
What the difference between a shoulder charge and what Jai Arrow did was, a shoulder charge, you're tackling someone with the ball in their hand. Tedesco, Queensland were already running 20 meters away with the ball. And that's from a safety perspective, this is what I don't 100% agree with. I know that they rub their heads and push them around and shit like that. That's fine. It's part of the game. It is what it is. But I believe that we would be having a completely different conversation if Tedesco had, had a very severe neck injury. When he hit Papali's knee, which could have happened.
Yeah.
Could have happened. And Arrow picks him up and literally dangles him like he did and then throws him to the ground.
Yeah.
Exacerbate the leg, the neck injury even more.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're definitely having a completely different conversation.
100% disagree. But anyway.
Their arguments are based off
something that occurs frequently through the game and was linked to concussions and injuries over a long period of time.
I don't like what I'm saying, but I'm saying that's the reality of the game as it is now.
And my bottom point, which I haven't even got to, got fined $550 by the NRL, and Fittler's come out and said that's not harsh enough. What he did was disrespectful. When he was pushed on what should have happened, he's like, I've got no answer for that. If the person who's having the most to say about it's got no say in what should have happened, then there's no real basis for the argument. There's a really cool article on Fox Sports by Chris Kennedy, who actually does some decent stuff up there. He's broken down the three games quarter by quarter. So every 15 minutes of each game, so it's 12 quarters, like a boxing match, a point is awarded to the team that tops each category within that 15-minute period. So each category is meters, kick meters, points, line breaks, tackle busts, total tackles, tackle efficiency, try-saving tackles, errors and penalties. So each time a team wins that stat over that 15-minute period, you get a point. Over the 12 rounds, basically, like a boxing match, Queensland beat New South Wales 112 to 111. So even in the second game where it was 34-10, New South Wales won that game 38-36 in points. It's a really cool article. It's a much, much more statistical style of looking at games, which is becoming more and more popular worldwide in all sports. So if you do want to have a look at that, jump on Fox Sports and go to news, and the article's called Origin Quarter by Quarter. It's a really cool way of breaking down the game. One last thing on that game that I think wasn't touched on, and the fact that it wasn't touched on, I think, is more of a testament to this player. I talk about him more than others because I watch him more than others, probably. Wasn't as effective as he was in the first game. Still played well in the second game, but played well again in this game. Did you see who passed the ball to Munster when Munster went on his three kick sequence? Because that was a fifth tackle and Queensland were kind of going nowhere. Yeah. He had a really good game. Solid game. He ran for 100 and something meters in game two. So he only ran for 80 meters this game. Two tackle breaks, one line break, two offloads, 21 tackles with one miss, which is pretty good for a halfback. Only had to do three one-on-one tackles, four kicks for 114 meters. Munster was the dominant kicker in both the games that they played together, which I find surprising overall because I'd expect him to do the attacking bombs and that sort of stuff, but he was the one kicking for distance as well. And there was one tackle that I remember, Cherry Evans took on Crichton one-on-one. Which it was an ugly tackle, I'll give you that. But he put his body right in front and he had a really solid sort of second or third fiddle even once Grant started doing his thing game. And I was quite happy to see that. But I do love his comment up on stage, which was quite brilliant. And showing off the country boy he is, not bad for the worst side in history sort of thing.
As a
Manly and Queensland fan, I know how hate it is from both sides. The only game I've ever been to at Brookvale live was with my wife, and it was a Manly Titans game. It was right after Queensland had won a series. It was the first series Cherry Evans had been in. And they said it over the speakers, and well done to Cherry Evans for winning Origin with the Queensland side. And Maddie and I were like the only people in our whole section who jumped up and were cheering. So I know how much he doesn't get cheered for Queensland down there and how much he doesn't get cheered for Manly up here. So I was just happy to see him play well. The last thing we're going to do to wrap up this episode before we go into our what's going to be the off-season, shortest off-season most likely, is go over our way too early Origin teams for next year. So we'll also have a coach, which I've just thrown in there as well, who you think the coach is going to be. So let's see how many of these we agree on. Let's go winners first, eh? Queensland at fullback, Ponga.
Allen and Holmes on the wings.
Yes and yes.
Coates and Gagai in the centres.
I've got Gagai and Blah. So it could be Coates, it could be Lee, it could be Morgan, it could be someone we haven't heard of yet. It can be anyone, whoever gets off to the best start.
It's Tabo Fidale next year.
It could be Tabo Fidale.
Munster and DC in the halves, obviously.
Yeah.
Papali, Grant and Welch.
Yeah.
Fafita, Capewell and Tino.
No and no.
Who you got?
Kafusi and Arrow. Kafusi had an average series.
Kafusi.
By the way, pre-episode, I'm just going to add Kafusi to the list of no names that Jared left out. We'll go over the others later. Was it Holmes to Allen you forgot as well?
No, is that a car I forgot?
Jesus.
Horsburgh.
So are you going to put Kafusi back into the back row somewhere?
Yeah.
Over Capewell, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Horsburgh.
And you're going to stick with Fasamawali at lock.
I loved him at lock.
Okay.
Horsburgh?
Nah, but I can see it.
Morgan as utility?
But I can see
Capewell it. Capewell and Arrow.
All right, so you left off three of my players, and I left off three of yours. All right, so I had the same 1 to 11. Then I had Kafusi and Arrow in the back row. I've gone for Brimson as my utility. I've gone for Tino Fasamawale as my...
Yeah, we can rotate those two, though.
I went Lindsay Collins, who I think you've forgotten about as well.
Ah, oh, shit.
As my bench prop. And then I've got Jaden Sewer, Kurt Capewell, or Corey Horsburgh all fighting for that fourth spot on the bench.
I love Collins too.
Yeah, I love Horsburgh, and I love Horsburgh for the firepower that he can bring, like a hothead. But I love the utility of Capewell, and I love the speed and the edge running of Sewer. So it'll all come down to what the rest of the squad's looking like, I think. With Fafita and Kafusi, you've got 80-minute players who can run the edge. So that might edge Sewer out. If there's an injury somewhere, Capewell's going to give you utility, and Horsburgh and Collins coming off the bench, replacing Papali and Welch would just be monstrous. So, yeah, I could see any of that makeup. So I'm just going to add Collins to that list of yours.
All right. For New South Wales, obviously Tedesco at fullback.
Yeah.
Unless you want to put Pappenhausen.
Nope.
Adokar and Tommy Trbojevic on the wings.
You sure you're going to put Adokar? You didn't forget about him.
Oh, shut up. All right, this centre pairing will be a long-term centre pairing for New South Wales and maybe even Australia.
Are we both going away from this New South Wales thing of putting the best players in positions that don't usually play? Yep. And we're actually putting centres there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right, so I've got Stags and Best
in my centres. I'd Stags, and I can see how good that could be.
Yeah. But that depends on Best's development too. Like, he could go either way next year. That's the thing. going on what his potential will be, he will play there eventually.
And my play is the same. It's based on potential. He had more of a year this year than Best. I've gone Crichton there over Best, yeah. But I could see it each way. I could also see Lomax there, but I think they're going to go for a specialist center rather than a fake.
Okay. And then obviously Tommy Trbojevic comes in on the wing, which he's got to be there. And then I've actually gone for the Dally M winner at 5'8". I reckon this with Cleary in the halves, Whiten and Cleary.
Yeah.
I think that should be the long-term halves pairing for New South Wales for a long time. You got to have Whiten in there, but you got to get him the ball in his hands. I've got Haas, Cook and Safidi up front.
I've got Haas and Safidi. No Cook for me. Thank you very much. Yes. I think Cook's had his run. I think he's going to win you a game like he did in game two, but he goes missing too long, too often. And if his forwards aren't there, it's not working. Coruscant's just got more strings to his bow than Cook does.
Fair enough. Okay. So in my back row,
I've also got him and Cleary.
I've got Cordner.
Yep.
Crichton.
Yep.
And Jake Trbojevic.
Oh, I'm just saying, yep, as in I'm hearing you. I don't.
Okay. You don't have Cordner there, do you?
I don't know how much we're going to see of him anymore.
He's still one of the best second rowers in there if he's playing.
Yeah, I know. Like, if he's playing, he's going to get picked. But I don't know how much more of him we're going to see.
Yeah.
Like, playing. I believe he'll be there. If he's playing, he'll be picked, obviously. This is my team, so he's not my team.
Okay, who you got?
I got Crichton. I've got Murray at lock.
Jesus.
And I really struggle with this second row position. It's the same as what we talked about, the bench of New South Wales. They've got so many forwards and so little edge runners outside of Frizzell and Crichton. And I just don't think Frizzell's like Cook. He goes missing too often. So I've gone Madison. Yeah, I'm not happy with it, but considering how many players they've got. Yeah.
You're just better off naming Bryce Cartwright. Okay. For my bench, I've got Cody Walker because I think that's his best position. Come on and just run around.
Yeah.
I've got Dale Finucane. I'm bringing back David Clemmer.
Me too.
And I got Cam Murray.
So I've got Trbojevic on my bench.
Yeah, but we swapped them around.
Yeah. So I've got
who's your utility?
I went with Radley.
See, I'm not 100% fan because he's Pommy. I thought he was Pommy.
No, he played last year.
For New South Wales?
Yeah.
Radley has never played for New South Wales.
Hasn't he?
Nah.
Or is it just because I hate him so much because he's been at the Roosters?
Yeah, no, Victor Radley has never played for New South Wales.
Oh. I'm picking him. So, neither is the picking Pappenhausen. Neither is Lupo or Gutherson or Keary.
I'm not a fan of not picking Cleary, but I think they got to put Whiten in six.
Yeah.
I think that scares Queensland more than anything.
Yeah.
And I just want a commitment of Haas pairing, and I believe Fittler's going to be the coach who's going to put Cleary in there. And look, Cleary, I am putting him in there because he's played 9 games now. And I hope that his learning curve is over. I really do. But I believe Whiten, they need to get him out of the centers and put him in six. I think the forward pack is pretty good. And I really like the idea because I love the power and the size and the speed of their back line. Like,
yeah.
even with Crichton over Best, that scares me. But I just love Stags and Best, like, up against Coates and Gay Guy. Like, fuck. That's a hell of a matchup, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
If they're both at full strength, I'm already looking forward to next year. Because it's kind of like, since the end of the Queensland dominance, the end of the, say, the, I don't know, I'm just going to call it the Immortal Era. Since the end of that, there was such a big drop for Queensland with the quality going out of the team. Not just the biggest names, Cronk, Smith, Slater, Inglis, but the supporting cast as well. Still big names in their own right. Hodges comes to mind as an example, Parker. Those sort of real, real established players, they all went kind of in one go. And I think what the leftover of that era is DCE and Papali.
And Gay Guy.
And Gay Guy. Oh, Kafusi might have been right at the... Maybe
DCE right came off the bench. Munster was around. And Holmes would have been around as well.
Yeah, but none of them were like standard book. And that was such a big drop. And that happened right at the same time as... There's the South Sydney emergence of Damien Cook and then the Adokar and then the Roosters emergence of Tedesco, the Trbojevic brothers, and it just went vroomp. Whereas I think not so much this year, but next year, if both teams are full strength, you're looking at both teams going, there are match winners all through New South Wales, Tedesco, Stags, Adokar, Crichton, Murray, but then you look at Queensland, Ponga, Gay Guy, Munster, Papali, Fifita. Like, it actually goes back to really, to me, really even teams in all areas. Like,
I'm excited New South Wales to see...
might have the edge here, Queensland might have the edge here, New South Wales have the edge here, Queensland have the edge here.
I'm excited to see Fifita play next year.
Yeah. Yeah, looking at those really two teams, you know the oldest player is?
Would be Cordner and mine.
Like, I mean, both teams.
DCE?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How good is that for Origin? Daly Cherins is going to be the oldest player next year. If our teams come right. And he's 31.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Okay. I think that's all, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm amped for that next year. I think that's going to be such a cool series if it all plays out. We haven't finalized our plans going forward, guys, but we're pretty much in the off season now. We'll go back to one pod a week, especially coming up to Christmas period and all that. We haven't settled on a night, but we'll throw it out on Twitter, on Facebook, when we've settled on what night suits both of us based on work schedule, sport, all that sort of stuff. But we'll be going back to one game a week. That's just rugby league's not a sport where a lot happens in the off season outside of signings and drunken mishaps. So let's hope for more of the first and less of the latter. But really hope you enjoyed that. Really hope you enjoyed Six Again. That brings us to the end of our first season ever doing this. Thank you so much for the support. We've had over 5,500 downloads our first season, which is ridiculous. Our followers are continuing to grow. We're on three main platforms now, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Just continue to rate and review us on iTunes and Apple and like and subscribe and share and do all that awesome stuff that you guys are already doing. And thanks for your support. And here's to season two. Anything from you, J-Rod?
Nah, I'm all good. Thanks, everyone.
Sweet. See you later.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio. Be sure to check out Adam's craft beer choice of the week.